from WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For years, Americans have thought and talked about racial lines. For a growing number of Americans, race is not about lines, but about mixing. Almost 7% of Americans are now estimated to be mixed race. Projections say their presence will triple by the middle of this century. Their voices, their view, may be the voice, the view of the future. This hour On Point, what it means now to be mixed race in a world that is not yet post-racial. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Is this you, mixed race in America? Do you feel like the future? How is it right now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Sacramento, California, is Lindsay Catherine Harris. She's a multimedia artist based in New York and creator of a multi-platform art project titled Evoking the Mulatto. At the heart of it, a whole lot of very candid interviews with young, mixed-race Americans. You can link to the whole thing at our website, onpointradio.org. Lindsay Catherine Harris, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What got you onto this project, mademoiselle?
Well, I started the project about 4 years ago, or started thinking about the project 4 years ago. And part of it was, you know, as you said, we're not yet post-race, but at that time, a lot of the rhetoric was around being post-race and being colorblind. And I kind of wanted to create a project that would, one, talk about my own, you know, experience, identity, perspective as a mixed-race person within a respect of a legacy of racial classification in the United States. And that's kind of where we started.
So who did you go out and talk to, Lindsay? People of all kinds of mixed races, or from my watching this last night, it looks like mainly white and black, or white and African American in the main.
Yeah, a part of it was being very intentional about how to create a project that was really pointed at looking at the black-white binary and looking at folks who were both black and white, identify as mixed or however they identified, but looking at that particular population as a way to talk about this larger issue of racial classification and talk about mixed race within the United States more broadly.
And why evoking the mulatto? Mulatto is such an old-fashioned sounding word. I can't remember the last time I heard anybody actually use it. And a word with a lot of history, not all pretty by any means. In this very contemporary reality, you've brought a kind of a 18th, 19th century word front and center. Why?
Part of that, yeah, thanks for asking. So part of it has to do with that it's you know, our history. Mulatto, as you said, that word, it's not something that we'd use in day-to-day. However, I've been called mulatto before. I think everyone in the project has been called mulatto, and that's something that is this word that's derived from the word mule. It's a you know, form of classification that has been placed on mixed bodies throughout the history of the United States, and it's a very real history. It's a very real legacy, and so just to call the project Evoking the Mulatto is a way for me not kind of not tiptoe around what we're really talking about here, which is, you know, mixed race identity within this legacy of a very violent, racialized past, and that has a lot to do with labels. And the word mulatto is kind of a way into that I found.
When I hear that word, it takes me back to a period where you know, one drop of African-American mm-hmm. blood and all that, very fierce kind of measurements of how much of this blood or that blood, mulatto and what, you know, quadroon and octoroon and all these sort of almost like chemistry set measurements of what was going on. As you talk with mixed-race young people today, do they still feel measured in that way? How much this or that or the other are you? Or are they, these days in American society, I guess it depends where you live and who you hang with, but are they just taken for themselves now or something in between, Lindsay?
Probably something between, right? So this idea of measurement, we don't have as many legal restrictions as we used to in terms of the United States and having that legal definition, right? And with the census, like what terms are applied to us and what's that meant in terms of specific rights in the United States. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot more fluid. But there's a lot that's still lingering on. So how you present, right? I'm very light-skinned, and that means a lot of things, right? If I'm walking down the street, how other people see me, all of that. And so someone who's a lot darker-skinned, right, it's going to mean very different things. So that's the part that, you know, this measurement, we don't have this type of, you know, chemistry as you're talking about, but we still kind of do, right, because we still kind of look at someone and judge them based on how they're looking and what it means to be mixed, what it means to be black, right? It depends so much on how you look and how you present and how you identify and kind of both of those things coming together.
We're going to hear a couple of the voices who you have found for your project, Evoking the Mulatto. They'll be with us live in just a minute, but let's listen to a little tape from the film project and more. Lindsay Catherine Harris is with us. You put it all together. Here's Giovanna Fisher talking about shifting beauty standards, what it means to be mixed race today.
What it means to be mixed race now is, like, you do, there's, like, some elements of it that are glorified. Here, this, like, hybrid of cultures. I think mixed people, this large group called mixed people, I mean, to some, you know, continue to be this symbol of progress.
Mixed race Americans maybe as a symbol of progress. The Pew report, the latest report, says 6+%, almost 7% of Americans now mixed race. The Census Bureau says by 2060, the portion will triple in this country. 10+% of American babies now multiracial. But still, race is a big element out there. Co Smith is one of the people that Lindsay talks to. We'll talk with him in a second. Here he is saying he wishes that the race factor didn't even come up anymore, but it does.
I hate that I even have to think about it. I hate that it's like even a thing.
Hate that it's even a thing, but it is. And once you're into this terrain, there's all kinds of questions get raised. Really interesting questions. Here's Lila Consuela Anton talking with Lindsay about her future children in a mixed race time.
Oh, my kids. I wonder how they're going to look like. I always wonder. Yeah.
So, Lindsay, what was your filter for who you would talk to? You know, many people in this country are mixed race if you go back enough generations, I suppose, and if you buy the whole racial construct. But who fit your definition of mixed race today?
Well, part of it was, you know, trying to focus in on a younger generation, too, right? So mm-hmm. thinking about those who are maybe between 20 and 35 who could talk about identity in a very clear and strong way. And that was intentionally kind of trying to get away from some of the tragic mulatto tropes that were out there that I was seeing, where identity kind of, or talking about mixed race identity was constantly surrounding I don't fit in, it's so hard, da 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 da. So trying to get folks who could talk very strongly about their lived experience and how they choose to identify and what that's meant in different spaces. And then also, you know, kind of by nature, those who are creative, those who are activists, those who are doing work that was directly kind of revolving around this.
So when you talked with young mixed race people, did they tell you that it was more hip, you know, to be mixed race now, or hard to be mixed race, or is this another one of those both and things?
I don't know if anyone would necessarily say that it is hip to be young.
Well, we just heard one of your guests talking about how, at least in beauty terms, there were times when it's held up as this, you know, desirable hybrid.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's also specifically within the black community, too. We see kind of lighter-skinned, specifically black women, serving as this example within mainstream media as representing entire race. And there's a lot of, you know, history of colorism and racism within that. And so thinking about mixed race people as not being this example for the entire black race, but kind of being someone who could shift between and talking, you know, when we talk about mixed race, being able to talk about all of that as well.
Did your subjects think that they are symbols of progress? We heard one of them say that just now. Did they buy that characterization of their, you know, racial hybrid standing?
I would say no. And maybe there are some who you know, could come up and disagree, but I really, I not a single person that I've talked to, both in the project, with my friends, or anyone I know would say that that being mixed race is kind of a symbol of progress. I think it's hard because in some ways it is, right? I mean, I can identify as mixed, and if I was born, you know, 100 years ago, I wouldn't have that option, right? I would be, you know, because of the one-drop rule, I would be black and that's it, right? And that would mean all of these social things, legal things. So in that way, yes, right, we have progressed, and we have, you know, a black mixed president. However, it doesn't mean we're finished, right? It doesn't mean that we've solved all of our problems in the United States in terms of racism, and obviously there's been a ton that's happening that to kind of counter that point as well.
Are there enough mixed-race people now that just being mixed-race was an identity in itself, or did the people you interviewed, the young people, I saw a number of them say they still felt like they kind of had to pick a team, if you know what I mean?
Well, I think that's also been like kind of the previous conversation as well, right? That it's either white or black or something else, right? And for a while, I think mixed race kind of served as that something else, as that other box. But what I personally feel, and I think what I was hoping to do with the project, is to not talk about it as like, oh, this other thing, but to talk about it with all of its complexities, and to talk about identity and race, not ignoring the past, but bringing that into the present, and then being able to deconstruct and complicate how we talk about identity. I identify as mixed. I also identify as black. And that is so much about, you know, the history of racial classification in the United States. And it's also about me wanting to kind of express solidarity and realize that I'm seen as black in a lot of different spaces. And that means very different things than being seen as white.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the mixed race life in the United States, racial identity, and how America's growing multiracial population sees the world. Lindsay Catherine Harris is with us. Her film project and more, she's titled Evoking the Mulatto, an old-fashioned sounding word, but now we've got a lot of mixed race people in the United States, and numbers growing. You can join us this conversation. Is this you? Is it your kids? Is it hard? Is it easier now? Is it headed toward a new normal? And what can mixed-race Americans show us, teach us about identity, how we understand race, about love, beauty, maybe the future? A big Pew report recently found 6.7 or so percent of Americans now multiracial. 10-plus percent of new babies in this country, multiracial. Census Bureau says that by 2060, the number or portion of mixed-race people in the United States will triple. All the way back in 1995, now President Barack Obama, certainly not president then, was talking about his memoir, Dreams from My Father. He talked there at the Cambridge Public Library about being biracial.
My father was a black African, and my mother was a white American. And much of my life was spent trying to reconcile the terms of my birth, that divided heritage, with the realities of race and nationality, tribal identities that exist not just in this country, but also overseas. So that this book is not so much a memoir, I think, as sort of a journey of discovery for me, some sense of trying to make sense of my family.
President, now president, not then president, Obama in 1995 talking about being biracial, mixed race. Lindsay Catherine Harris, creator of Evoking the Mulatto, joins us from Sacramento, California. And Lindsay, we've got a couple of the people who you interviewed for your project with us now. From New York, Kalia Warren is with us. She's a Brooklyn-based filmmaker featured in Evoking the Mulatto. Kalia, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, thanks, Tom.
It's great to have you. And also in New York, Co. Smith is with us, painter, also featured in Evoking the Mulatto. Co., thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. I'm very happy to have the two of you here. You're both very interesting on film in this project. Kalia, was it a welcome thing to you to be invited in to participate in this? Or was it like, oh, boy, you know, do we have to talk about this? Is this the thing that that defines me? Were you happy to join in the conversation or not?
Definitely, yeah. I was very happy to be able to contribute to a project like this and to bring something to it. Lindsay, you know, as you've been speaking with her mm-hmm. over the past half hour, you can see that she's brilliant. So I was just happy to be a part of this.
Kalia, what's the racial mix in your case? Is that a rude question, or is it a necessary obvious question? Is it your mom?
Not in this context.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's all about context, about place and time. My father is black and my mother is white, so I identify just as mixed race.
And Ko, what about you? What's your parentage look like? And what about your willingness, readiness to join this conversation about it?
For all of us, I think it was something that we've been thinking about our entire lives. So I was, I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to share whatever experiences I have. And, thank you, Lindsay, for bringing us both into this, because otherwise it's something that just pinballs around your brain. My father is African American and Native American, and my mother is a lot of European. So that's mine. Very close, but a little bit different.
And Lindsay Catherine Harris, I never specifically asked you. I never know what exactly to ask. What about in your case, in parentage, and how all that is unfolded?
My dad is black and my mom is white.
So, Ko, let me come to you on this question of identity. Mm-hmm. In the film that Lindsay's put together, a lot of people talked about their felt need ultimately to identify with one camp or team or race or another. Mm-hmm. We heard President Obama, we've heard him over the years talking about that, how he ultimately sort of had to make a choice. He chose African-American, black, as his racial identity. How do you look at that? Has it been a challenge for you? Has it been obvious to you what that would be? How do you have a self-definition now?
I'm not a teenager anymore, yep. Thankfully enough.
Yeah.
But I think this is something that, a lot of not just people of mixed heritage go through. I mean, everybody tries to find everybody has a period where when they're trying to define themselves and sort of find themselves, and particularly when you're, younger, in high school and before, and even through college and even after sometimes, yeah. there's a real challenge to doing that. I think because being, a person, a mixed person is, for me, so personal. Each one of us has a very different story, a different mix, a different blend, a different background. So I think in establishing one's identity, it can be really fraught, especially with social pressures to, as you said, like pick a side. With me, I really didn't start getting comfortable with how I defined myself until college. I was talking to my wife about it last night because my wife is mixed as well, albeit mm-hmm. from Paris. There's always this pressure to choose. And by the time I got to college, I pretty well understood that race is a social construct and all that. So I realized that I wasn't ever really going to be one or the other. That's not a choice, It's sometimes you can't pick because.
But there's a point in the film, Ko, where you say it's very interesting. Yeah. You say the only inclusion that I've ever felt is with the black community, which
that's
I appreciate.
True.
You say they're like,
no, that's true, but it's not a complete mm-hmm. inclusion. I say that, but you have to take it with a grain of salt because mm-hmm. it's like. Walking down the street, most of the time people think I'm Puerto Rican, mm-hmm. which is great. But, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. So
you also say in there, part of me has always felt, not black enough. Not black mm-hmm. enough for what? For like complete automatic inclusion or?
Complete automatic inclusion and my own sort of, as a young person, my own ideas. My own ideas of what it is to be black, everybody has an opinion, everybody has an idea, everybody has this feeling about what it is to be black. And for me, it is about inclusion, social inclusion. It is about personal inclusion. It's a really nuanced thing. So with my life experience, when I was younger, that was something I was really looking for, but. And I got to some extent, but it was always sort of, it wasn't a complete acceptance. So, you know, I never, yeah. And that's how it ended up. I ended up figuring it out in my mind is like, yes, I am black, you know, but there's also a lot of other things going on here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Kalia, do you feel pressure to have a racial identity in the United States in 2015, or is there freedom just not to be defined by race?
Well, I personally never really felt like I needed to choose a side. You know, my parents raised me from very young to have, they were very, you know, politically correct and wanted, told me to identify as biracial from when I was like 3 or 4 years old. And so that's always just kind of felt accurate to who I am and to how I kind of define myself. When I was a kid, I didn't realize that, you know, it's like a lot of little girls' dolls, whenever they do the black version of the doll, they actually just do a light-skinned girl. But I had thought that they were actually making biracial dolls that, like, looked like me. I didn't realize that they were just, that was their African-American doll. And so I had, like, this collection of biracial dolls that I always would, like, show to guests coming over. So I guess, you know, I had a strong form of identity early on, and I mean, it's not something that I really think about in the day-to-day anymore just because I kind of felt like, you know, when I was in high school, I actually made a documentary about being mixed race, and I kind of worked through a lot of sort of adolescent identity issues at that time. And now it's part of who I am, but I also, it's not like I wake up every day like, I'm a mixed race woman. Like,
right.
It's just, you know, it's like if you're a white male, you don't think about that every day, but it's part of who you are, you know?
Lindsay, you had some interesting panel discussions as part of this project, Evoking the Mulatto. And at one point, people are talking about how in Hollywood's presentation of black Americans, especially when it comes to female black Americans, Hollywood style is often a mixed race actress. It's kind of along the same lines Kalia is talking about with the doll. That has been the person put forward to represent African-Americans at the same time, very often, has been a mixed-race actress in particular.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that we're only just now starting to see more representation within mainstream media, within film and television. And we have some, you know, amazing black female actresses who are not, you know, super light-skinned. And that's great. And we need a lot more of that in order to show the complexity of one being a black woman, of representations of blackness, and especially so that, you know, that mixed-race folks don't serve as kind of representations of entire bodies of people that have so much complexity.
We've got a lot of callers for all three of you. This is a subject that is right in the middle of many, many American families right now. For some, it's familiar and something's been around a long time. For others, it's brand new. Carlos is calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Carlos, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, yes, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. What's your story, Carlos?
Well, my son and his girlfriend had a baby last year. As parents, I guess his girlfriend is Haitian, and I'm Spanish, Colombian descent, and my wife is French Canadian descent. Their family's from Maine, so
yeah,
a little mixed here. So yeah, it's just a new experience for us. We love our little grandson; he's adorable, and I was just listening to you. I got a chance to listen to you, and I always enjoy your show. And I said, "Oh, let me call in. I guess just kind of look at this from."
Would you call your son and his girlfriend, as you say, is it a white black couple in the way that Americans have historically looked at this? Will your grandchild be? Do you see your grandchild as a mixed race child? Are you comfortable with that?
Well, I guess you know it's. Yeah, I guess he's mixed race. I mean, he looks mixed race, at the end of the day, he's my grandson. You know, society's going to look at people the way that they want to. Me being Hispanic, living in South Florida, you know, I feel comfortable. You know, I grew up in the States and born in New York, and so I've lived here most of my life, but. You know, sometimes, you know, people are talking to me in English. If I'm in Miami, people feel comfortable in talking to me Spanish. And occasionally I'll be in an area where there's not a lot of Spanish people, but somebody will talk to me in Spanish just because I look Spanish. And
Carlos, may I ask you, Carlos, are you worried about your grandson's mixed race identity, or do you think that in the United States of this century, it's just going to be sort of regular, like no big deal?
I think we're moving in the right direction. I think that, you know, since I was a kid, and just seeing how things are changing, I think we're moving in the right direction. Am I concerned? Yeah, I'm sure I'm concerned. You know, I guess prejudice is still out there, and racism is still out there. So as far as that goes, yeah, I'm concerned about it. But at the same time, I'm hopeful. I think that you know, society, you know, as we get more blended and things change and demographics change in the country, you know, it'll be less and less an issue. And really, it should be less and less an issue.
Carlos, we wish you and your grandson and everybody all the best. I mean, Kalia, what about it? What in this stream of mixed race, you know, these days in 2015 and looking forward, what's hard? What's easy? What's changing within your lifetime already, Kalia?
I think something that was in the news kind of recently we were talking about was with Taye Diggs. You know, he's talking about how he sees his son as biracial and wants him to acknowledge, you know, his white side just as much as his black side.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that kind of became really controversial within sort of a lot of, I guess, black sort of community forums.
He's married to the very famous Broadway actress Idina Menzel, white, I guess.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've talked to people of past generations who were of multiracial heritage and are lighter skinned. Mm-hmm. And the way that they explained it is that they said they don't feel the need to call themselves mixed race, and they only call themselves black because they felt like the white side of them didn't need defending. It didn't need pride the way that they're the way that being African American, that needed to have defending and that needed some pride. So they, even though, yes, they technically they are mixed race or they have white relatives, they just felt like that side of them, that they didn't need to acknowledge that as much, just because there was so, you know, so much obvious discrimination against their black side. And so I think that kind of is changing because, you know, I can completely understand and identify with that point of view. But at the same time, in my experience, I don't feel that I have to do that. I can say that I'm biracial, that yes, my mother is white and my father is black, and I feel like I've been raised around two cultures. And, you know, maybe because I haven't faced the kind of discrimination that past generations have faced, I feel comfortable saying that, you know?
So you're kind of taking the Taye Diggs position for yourself here. You're acknowledging two races in your heritage.
Yeah, I don't know if he stated it in the best way, you know, but I just think that it's more of just like an accurate descriptor more than anything else, not saying that I'm, you know, discounting or trying to move myself away from being black, but just, you know,
mm-hmm.
Just saying that that's an accurate description of my heritage.
It's funny. Idina Menzel was right here at this table with me just a few weeks after that baby was born. I guess the baby is 6 years old now. Taye Diggs out with a new book called Mixed Me, and it's inspired by his son, Walker. Here he is explaining why he prefers the term mixed to black, Taye Diggs says, when he talks about his own son.
I don't want my son to be in a situation where, you know, he calls himself black, and then everybody thinks he has a black mom and a black dad, and then when they see he has a white mother, mm-hmm. they're wondering, oh, well, what's going on? Are you ashamed of your white? Why are you telling? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Taye Diggs talking there with the website The Griot. Lindsay, what do you think of Tay's approach to this?
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, obviously he can, you know, it's his family. He can do what he wants. But I think that for a lot of parents, and especially mixed parents or two different races, they have trouble talking about race with their kids. And from my perspective, I feel like people are always going to look at you and wonder what's going on. And so if you know, his child identify or any child who is biracial identifies as black, they should just be able to speak about race in a way that allows them to back up why they identify that way. And, you know, for really young kids, obviously, they're not going to be able to have all of the political nuances of that. But they can be equipped with all of the tools to acknowledge everything and so that it's not...
We'll be right back to look at more of this. Lindsay, stand by there. Co-Smith, Kalia Warren. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the mixed race life in the United States, racial identity, and how America's growing multiracial population may see the world. We learned a lot from Lindsay Catherine Harris's project, Film and More. It's called Evoking the Mulatto. Lots of interviews with young mixed-race Americans. Really fascinating. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Lindsay joins us today from Sacramento, California. From New York, two of those participants in her project are with us, Co Smith, painter based in New York, and Kalia Warren, Brooklyn-based filmmaker, is with us. You can join us as well. Mixed-race Americans, talk to us. What's hard? What's easy? What's changing? What do you see that others may not? Do you still have to choose a camp? Will we get past that one day? And is this the future, or is it the present in your life? Here a couple of clips from Lindsay's Evoking the Mulatto. This is Jeremy Robinson talking about going off to college and which fraternity do you join. He's mixed race himself.
I was rushed by a black fraternity. They were really cool. But then when after I came in freshman year, a lot of my friends on my hall became really close friends with, actually, I mean, they were white, so they ended up joining a white frat. They're all my close friends, so I joined that fraternity. I still was in that minority role in Greek life.
Rushed by a black fraternity, then ultimately joining a white fraternity, and lines really began to blur. Here's another participant from Evoking the Mulatto talking about, this is Kate Faust, talking about belonging and dating and thinking about marriage and parenting and who might look like what in her own family.
That is something that I've thought about, that if I do have kids with a white person, or even just a light person, like anyone with like light pale skin, that my kids will probably be pretty white, and then, you know, I would once again be the only black person in my family, and that is kind of rough. You know, I don't know that I want that.
Lindsay Catherine Harris, things get very real when you get intimate about romance, and I thought it was one of the most interesting parts of your project, and people wrestling with the nuances of, on the one hand, they want to be colorblind, and maybe on the other, they're thinking about, well, you know, who am I attracted to? Who's going to want to be with me? Who do I want to be with? Once the lines are pulled down, it can get very nuanced and interesting out there, Lindsay.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, I think that was also one of, you know, kind of my favorite episodes as well, because it's a very intimate thing, right? And it becomes very real when we talk about, well, who are we attracted to and all of that. But it's also about, like, you know, real things such as, like, raising kids and how would you raise them and what they end up looking like very much impacts and influences how they're going to be perceived in the world and whether they're going to be, targets on the street or whether they're going to be able to, challenge and question themselves. So I feel like it was something that kind of, as you said, kind of went in and out of being very intimate, like very fun kind of type of conversation, to something that was really real, especially for those who have, you know, have choices and are thinking about choices in terms of who they're dating and all of that.
Here's Co Smith in the film Co talking about dating. Here's Co.
I've always been a little bit nervous about dating a black woman because, you know, a part of me feels like I'm not going to live up to whatever it is that might be expected of me, you know?
Co, explain that nervousness to us. You're a very light-skinned, mixed-race man. You felt that nervousness about dating a black woman because of, was it a skin color thing or a cultural identification thing or what?
I knew I shouldn't have. I think this goes back to the whole, to the whole thing about being comfortable with yourself and how you identify as a person of mixed race, you know? When I was younger, I did have, I did have those feelings of, not being black enough, in quote unquote, and to live up to like whatever ideas I had in my head about what, African American women may want, which I should have no opinion about at all. Like, I am not an African American woman, so how could I know besides asking one, right?
We all carry doubts around, right? I mean, we all have our own personal sets of doubts and.
Yeah, and in the few years since that has aired, my feelings have changed a bit, obviously. But but yeah, there was that feeling a lot when I was younger that, you know, I was sort of less than in that arena. Not really a problem for me anymore, but
Kalia, yeah, if I may come to you, I mean, lots of people are looking more broadly than they might have certainly a century ago when there were pretty tough social responses if you looked across race lines. Mm-hmm. In your case, do you just look out, if you think in romantic terms, and I don't know where you stand on all that, but have you just looked out in all directions? Do you, are you thinking, well, maybe somebody who's sort of my what mix of things, or is it irrelevant?
I mean, I don't really consciously think about that when I'm looking for someone to date. I guess it kind of comes more in terms of, you know, I want to date someone that I feel comfortable having mm-hmm. these kinds of conversations with. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily always mean a person of color, but it does mean someone who's open to talking about these things and who kind of, you know, just has more of an open mind. But sometimes, you know, you do find that white people, it can be uncomfortable just any mention of the topic of race. And so, you know, that can be an issue in dating. But, you know, I don't, I don't have any sort of one preference or another as far as, you know, who I look for in a mate.
I think that's one of the advantages of being mixed. You know, it's it really sort of opens your eyes to a lot of different people and, mm-hmm. and lets you dive into a lot of different situations, you know?
Definitely.
An open mind and ease with it, and in many ways embodying it, mm-hmm. let you go in lots of directions. So many callers for you guys. Julene in Boston. Julene, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your story?
So, I'm half black and I'm half white. I actually grew up in Georgia, so okay. Down south.
Yep.
A lot of dynamics there going on, but I have a daughter now. Who, you know, her dad is black, and I guess for me growing up, I was always given the foundation of, you know, a strong foundation of knowing both parents and being close with both sides of where I come from.
Lucky you, lucky you.
I find that as I have, right, very lucky. The challenge now with my daughter is just, you know, the relationship with her and I mean, should she be considered black? I mean, she's only a quarter, quote unquote, white. Where does that leave me as her mom? If she is considered, quote, black, how do I instill that same understanding of all pieces of who she is, and how does society kind of look at her?
Julene,
that's my challenge.
My guests probably understand you pretty well, but help me. Is it so that you have just a language to talk with your daughter? Is it about feeling close to her? Is it about feeling the same? Or what are you looking for in this with this
I
question?
I guess it's more of how she is going to look at herself moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly for me being, you know, half and half, the challenges already exist every day. In terms of, you know, what am I, who am I, and where do I come from?
Mm-hmm.
So she's got more of an African-American background.
Yep.
So, you know, and certainly I think my goal as a parent would be to just give her as much information as she can, and she can be, you know, she can feel
yeah.
free to choose.
I think you're right.
To identify with one over another, and she may one day. So, you know, it's not so much as a conflict that I'm seeking advice for. It's just kind of, you know, just speaking about what that is. I mean, it was one thing for me to go and grow up and deal with the cultural difficulties that I dealt with. It's another thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's
your child.
Parent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And your sensitivity can be great there. Well, let's put it to my panel. I mean, Kalia, do you have advice? She's not looking for advice maybe, but maybe she is a little bit. What do you say, Kalia?
I mean, I would say that, I mean, I don't think it's something that that kids really need to, you know, you don't need to ask them to choose what their identity is. I think that that's just something that naturally comes when you grow up, you know, you find your identity in a lot of different ways, not just as far as your race, but I don't think it needs to be, you know, like you decide, okay, at 12 years old, this is how, like what I do, you know, this is the race that I'm going to be and that I'm always going to be. You know, I think it's more about feeling like a kid, I think, is just exposed to the cultures that they come from, you know, and it sounds like that's already happening. I don't think it's something that needs to be so, like, clearly defined. Yeah. But
you can understand, Lindsay, I got from evoking the mulatto that in your own story, in your own family, there's quite a range of skin tone among siblings and parents. And there was some sense of, you know, children wondering about relationship based just on skin color and thinking about their own parents and the sort of nuances that emerge there, whether or not you want to lay down an identity, Lindsay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely. I mean, I think that goes back to what we're talking about, is that, you know, the identity is also is about, like, self-identity, but it's also about how you are perceived in the world. And so being light-skinned, for a lot of people, I'm seen as white. And if I was darker-skinned, I wouldn't really have that kind of ability to blend in to different white spaces. So, I mean, I feel like there's a reality to it as well, you know. So for kids who, you know, that skin color, that's the reality. Mm-hmm. But it's also, like, as Kaylee is saying, is that, you know, it doesn't have to be this big thing that has to happen at this certain point. It's really just about equipping children to talk about race and to understand what that means in terms of their culture and in terms of this history.
Let's go to Brent. Sorry, Kalia.
I just wanted to add something to what Lindsay was saying, where I do agree that, you know, I mean, we're in a different situation as light-skinned women than, say, if you're a dark-skinned, like, boy, for instance. Mm. You know, it is important maybe to talk about race in that kind of way, where you have to know, like, mm-hmm. if the police will look at you a certain way if you dress a certain way, you know, just so even if... So I think in those kind of situations, it can be very helpful for parents to discuss, at least not in terms of telling their kid to identify a certain way, but at least this is how the world perceives you, and you may have to learn to be careful mm-hmm. for those reasons.
Sadly, but true. Brent in New York, Manhattan. Thanks for calling, Brent. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me on. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm African-American. I'm originally from the South, and I'm married to a woman from Korea. My wife is actually from South Korea.
Great.
We have two biracial boys, ages 6 and 3. And when I listen to your panel, I hear people who were raised by baby boomers who had all these racial issues mm-hmm. and therefore put it down on their kids. I can tell you from my kids today and the parents that I know, I'm an older Gen Xer, we don't have these problems, and our kids don't have the problems that your panel is discussing. They really do represent the past, and they're not looking forward to the future. They are talking about, I guess they're in their 20s and 30s or maybe a little older, but they are discussing issues that really are, it's not a bygone era, but it is on the way out. And the mixed race children you see today, I'm talking about the kids in grade school, mm-hmm. they are very different in how they look at each other and how they see the world and themselves.
I'm so glad for your call, Brent. Lindsay, how about it? We're past this, is the message from Brent, a sort of millennial Gen X parent, and this just isn't even on his screen. Did you find that, Lindsay? Is it geographic? Is it age, generational?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think it's all of those things. And, yeah, it is generational for sure. And part of it's like, okay, my generation and, you know, of 20s and 30s, like, this is the generation that's having kids now, right? And so making sure that we are able to kind of have that conversation, as Brent was saying, with, you know, with his family, that's great, right, that he's able to do that. And part of it was that, you know, I created this project specifically because some of the rhetoric I was seeing around biracial families was more about race doesn't exist in our family, and I don't understand why society sees my child as this way. And so I feel like talking about race and just that in and of itself is so important to be able to transcend it.
Co, do you feel like mixed-race Americans will sooner or later, one way or another, be part of the ongoing solution to our tough racial history? Will we just get together and not fit the old categories anymore, as Brent suggests?
I mean, the categories are changing for sure. You know, the more people get together and have, children of multicultural children, mm-hmm. multiracial children. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, it's gonna be a long time before there won't be any need for a conversation about race in America. You know, and as long as America has racial tensions and racial problems, you know, these things are this is a conversation that's going to need to be had. You know, I mean, we're not going to be able to, like, you know, screw our way to racial equality here, you know, like, just because we have more mixed people doesn't mean that everything's going to be okay. It just means we're going to have a more nuanced conversation.
Well, it's been great to begin. Well, I guess you've begun, and others as well, Lindsay, but to carry that on right here, and I'm really grateful to all of you for being with us to help us do it. Lindsay, how about the reception you've got for your work in this? Are you surprised by it in any way? Are you happy with it?
Yeah, all of those things. It's been really great. There's been a lot of positive feedback for the project, and it's kind of gone obviously to a national scale right now as we're having this conversation. So it's been great, and I just hope to continue having more portraits, projects, more conversations about this.
Lindsay Catherine Harris is the creator of Evoking the Mulatto. Lots of really interesting interviews with young mixed race Americans about how they see the world, how they live in the world, their experience. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Co Smith, New York-based painter, is part of the project. He's in it, and you can hear more from him there. Co, thank you for joining us today from New York.
Thank you.
And Kalia Warren, you can find her there as well, Brooklyn-based filmmaker. Kalia, terrific to have you with us. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Tom.
Lindsay Catherine Harris, congratulations on the project. Thanks for joining us today. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.